I never met my grandfather, but Dad told me of him. A builder who, as you've heard, moved around a lot. Peter remembers that he was in Newtown during the First World War. I remember that he was in Kensington during the First World War. For he tells me about watching from down at that dreadful pub at the roundabout the soldiers marching out to Long Bay, for he lived there as well. In fact, in his few years at school, it was only about 7 or 8 years, there were about 30 schools he attended. There were 6 kids in his first family and 3 more in the second. And his grandfather, my grandfather, is buried in Waverley Cemetery. Dad's death got me thinking too about fathers and grandfathers, and that's why I turn to this passage in 1 Peter chapter 1. An unusual passage, I guess. Complex and not altogether easy passage, which I'm sure you'll find helpful if you have open. There's a contrast there of two kinds of fatherhoods. The father in verse 17, who judges each man's work impartially, to whom in verse 14 the children are to be obedient. And then the other fatherhood that we see in verse 18. You're redeemed at the end of it from the empty way of life handed down to you from your forefathers. An empty way of life. One thing Dad did tell me about my grandfather was of Dad's last scene and sight of his father. The year was 1919. Dad turned 10 that year. Walter, the 6th child, had just been born. And my grandfather was delirious with the fever of the flu. And the flu, which to us, of course, is just a heavy cold, was in 1919 a death sentence, as more people died of the flu in that year than had died in the 4 years of the Great War. It was a worldwide plague that for us today is almost impossible to understand. My grandmother was in bed because of the baby, and grandfather was walking around the house, round and round, asking, "Alice, what will become of us? What will happen to us?" Well, what became of them was death for my grandfather, and her first widowhood for my grandmother, and poverty for them all. Though they moved a lot, Dad was not born in poverty, but he was raised in it. And his adult experience of the Great Depression only reinforced it, and its bitter lessons, and defined him as a person, for he never was away from that. It was why he was the great worrier. His capacity for worry was endless. His justification was, it was cheap, it didn't cost much. Dad's inheritance was this impoverished childhood, denied an education. Which was all the more shame for his great intelligence. And given responsibilities that we would never give children today, and should never have then either. Yet, he escaped the poverty trap as very few people do. And he escaped and raised his three sons, each one of which received more years of education at university than he had received at school. And he paid for us to do it, and stood with us, and helped us, and continued to help us. When I started a small publishing business, he was the chief worker for nothing. The first 2 years of publications of the briefing, he personally touched and handled every one of them. He was never bitter. He was never resentful. He was never angry or depressed about the deal that life had broken. But why do I call it a hijack, a kidnap? Because of the second point, that is the great rescue. For look there in verse 18 how it's described. For you know that it was not with perishable things, such as silver or gold, that you were redeemed from the empty ways of life handed down to you from your forefathers. See that unusual word for us, redeemed? It's the word ransomed. It's the word rescued by the payment of a price. It's purchasing freedom. The empty way of life was a kidnap that had to be ransomed to bring freedom. But the purchase price was not cheap. And so he says, it's not with perishable things like silver and gold, things that we would value and think are important. That's not what it is. It's something much more expensive than that. Verse 19, you are rescued, you are redeemed, you are purchased, you are ransomed. Verse 19, with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. For the way in which God has ransomed us and rescued us from our captivity to the futility of this life is by the death of his one and only Son, who died as a sacrificial lamb to redeem us, to release us, but released us to live a new life, a different life, in a new family. Which is that third theme, the family of God, which has God as its father, verse 17, since you call on a father, in your prayers you call on a father who judges each man's work impartially, that now you can be the obedient children, not conformed to the patterns of life of this world. And so, the last verse, verse 21, that through this precious lamb that was sacrificed for us, God's only Son, through him, you believe in God, who raised him from the dead and glorified him, so your faith and hope are in God. Hope is so much a part of life. Dad's mind never really dimmed. The sharp, whimsical comments at the fish and chip shop evening meals on a Saturday night, which he always insisted on buying us, was there to the end. Though in the last week, he made two comments about ageing, which were one comment he made and one that Peter and I observed, that indicated the end, now we can see in hindsight. He said that he had become old. And when we asked him to define old as opposed to middle-aged, he said, I became old the day that I could no longer play golf. He was 82 at the time. Middle age is while you can still play it. But Peter and I observed that there was this diminution of hope. He had stopped looking forward to the next thing that was going to happen. And life without hope is not life. But in the new family of God, you believe in God and you have hope in God. For death is not the end, For the Lamb that died on our behalf was raised again to give eternal life and was glorified, and we will share in that glory. And so we live in faith and hope in God, even in the face of the coffin. But this new life and this new family puts us out of step with the world, because you no longer live conformed to the evil desires of your ignorance. You now live, verse 17, as strangers, as aliens, as refugees, as people who are not really at home. But what of Dad? Well, he lived as part of the hijacked world, contributing to it his own evil, although he was more conscious of that than any of us, and suffering unjustly and unfairly from this world's captivity to evil and to death. He inherited from death poverty, hardship, and injustice. He lived as part of this hijacked world. And yet he knew of the rescue of Christ. He knew of it before I was born. He was a Sunday school superintendent before I was alive. He was teaching others of the things of God all my life. And he always knew of Christ to be his God from that strange teenage prayer time that he had. And he knew and loved the Apostles' Creed, the resurrection from the dead, from which he found great comfort at the time of my mother's death. He didn't have much more to hope for in this lifetime, but he never diminished in his hope of eternal life. He said frequently that he didn't mind being dead, but he minded a lot the process of dying, and he wished that it would be painless and quick, especially so that he wouldn't be a burden to his family. And in that, God gave him his request. And knowing Christ meant that his faith and hope in God meant that he stood as a stranger to this world. A stranger who knew God as his father. He was astonished in his middle age to discover the unbelief in our society. He was astonished and scandalized to find people acting in a society with the degeneracy that is now paraded in our media daily. He was appalled by it. For he opposed immorality. All his years he spent enjoying and working for his golf club. Ultimately he resigned presidency and from the committee on ethical principles. It was another defining moment of Dad, that much as he loved his golf and his club, he couldn't serve if they weren't going to act righteously. He was an honest man of great integrity. But death is really about us as well, isn't it? For death is the starting point of wisdom. The party is the cackle of fools. The house of mourning is the house of wisdom. For even death of an old man full of years and full of joys is the bell tolling for us. Because death is such an absolute, And it is so much our absolute. For in a world which now mocks at all virtues, turns them into values, and allows everybody to make it their own, death stands as an absolute that you can't relativize away. It calls out for reasons, and it demands something more than me living to my values. It demands virtue. We've all been born into a hijacked world, and we can choose to live in it and be at home in it, just like our forefathers. But what hope do we have but death? And what hope do we have in death? Alice, what will become of us? What will happen to us, Alice? He recalled it often to me in quiet moments. Or we can now live by faith and hope in God because of the Lamb that has died for us and been raised again. But such faith and hope in God must mean that we are to be aliens and refugees and strangers in this world, and therefore need to prepare our minds for action and to be self-controlled and set our hope fully on the grace that is to be given to us when Jesus Christ is revealed. The difference between these two ways of living under these two fathers is death. Not our death, but Christ's death and his resurrection that redeems us. Arthur Jensen hardly knew his own father, but he knew God as Father and has become for us himself a great father and a great grandfather and a great great grandfather. And all praise to God.